So this third foundation of mindfulness, which is what we're going to work on this morning, is probably the one that's most, just right here behind me, it's one of the ones that's most, I don't know what the word is, it's the most difficult to kind of practice with, I think, because historically it would be called mindfulness of mind, which to me doesn't give me much of a clue. How do I be mindful of the mind? And so when we look at it more in kind of what we're dealing with here, we're seeing that we're starting to enter into the what I would call the three components to the mindfulness of mind. There's the mental state. What is the mental state? What is the mental attitude? And what would be the emotion? So all three of those things would be categorized in the third foundation of mindfulness. Now, the thing about it that makes it so hard is it's not thinking. It's not about thoughts. It's about the field of awareness. It's about the experience that the thoughts arise in. So a lot of times I don't have them with me, but I use the analogy of glasses. So if I had, you ever have a pair of sunglasses on and go into a building and not know you have the sunglasses on and you think it's dark? There we go. Right? So my third foundation of mindfulness is really associated with my perception. It's how am I seeing? So I might be seeing things through the lens of anger or fear or anxiety, but I don't even know that I don't even know that I have these on. I don't even know. So there's a way in which the third foundation of mindfulness is sort of the filter of the experience that I'm looking through. So what is going on in my mental state? Is there a mood happening? Am I tired? Do I feel a bit down? Am I worried? Am I anxious? Is there kind of something going on in my mental state, in my mental attitude, in my emotion that's coloring the way I'm seeing experience? And am I able to take off these glasses and go, oh, okay, what filter am I looking through right now? So what is the mental state? What is the attitude? What is the emotion? So they're all included in this aspect of mindfulness. Now the problem, this is the big problem I've noticed, is coming from an Asian culture or an Asian tradition, the word heart and mind are the same. So in Asian cultures, they don't differentiate between mind and emotion or thoughts and emotions. They consider it one thing. So the Pali word for this third foundation is citta, mindfulness of citta, which basically means heart mind. So what is happening in my heart mind? So what is happening in the psycho, you could call it the psycho-emotional experience, which probably for some of us might make more sense. So there's a way in which we can see what's doing the seeing, you might say. And so when we look at this map of the mind, sanya, this Pali word sanya, which means perception. So in every moment you're perceiving things in a certain way, right? And so the way you're perceiving things is the way you're filtering experience through this mind, through awareness itself, through this lens. And that is going to dictate the attitude that you have about that. It's going to dictate the view, the opinion. It's going to dictate everything. And so, but from a practice perspective, like if you get a book on the four foundations of mindfulness, the chapter is like really, really small. There's just not a lot in there. And I think the main reason why is because, so basically what they're looking for is the presence and absence of greed, hatred, and delusion in classic Buddhist study of Satipatthana. So if we kind of follow the trail of breadcrumbs and we see the feelings, the pleasant, unpleasant, neutral feelings, we talked about that yesterday, right? We spent some time. So there's a way in which we can be a little bit predictive. So if I'm having a pleasant feeling in the second foundation of mindfulness, what's likely to arise in the third? So again, if there's a pleasant experience going on, I'm likely to experience greed in the third foundation, which is a strong word, but that's just a grabbing quality. My awareness grabs at what's wanted. Right? That's sort of what the mind does. So when it comes to pleasant, we're likely to grab at it. When it's unpleasant, we're likely to drop it or to try to get rid of it or to resist it, or they use the word hatred, which is, again, a strong word. Greed, hatred, and delusion, very strong words. But a wide range of ways in which one could experience a type of hatred. It could be a little bit of resistance. It could be a tiny bit quality of not wanting, of pushing away, of trying to get rid of. It could be like just pain in my knee that I'm resisting. And that's going to color everything. If there's some resistance in the system, if there's a low-grade quality of something that's happening that's not wanting, that's going to affect my mental state and my mental attitude, and it's certainly going to affect my emotion. So we want to be able to see if we can identify the presence of that and or the absence of that. And the absence of that, they don't talk about that so much, which I think is problematic because we don't oftentimes recognize the absence of something. So say I consider myself a person who has a lot of anxiety, which a lot of people, I have anxiety, I'm an anxious person. And people who have anxiety have this delusion or this idea that they're anxious all the time. But they don't notice when they're not anxious. They're not like, oh. You know, how often do we say to ourselves, oh, I'm not angry right now. I'm so glad I'm not angry right now. It's so nice to not be angry. So again, if we go back to sort of this MBSR model and this finding that Kabat-Zinn found out that people who have chronic pain think that they always have pain. People who have anxiety think that they're always anxious. People who have depression think that they're always depressed. People who are, you know, who are angry think that they're always angry. But that's actually not true. So the more mindfulness we have, the more we can see the presence of these particular states. We see in our meditation practice that there's maybe some wanting going on, some greed. Could be a wide range of forms. It could just be wanting the body to be more pleasant. It could be wanting there to be some beef at lunch. There could be all kinds of ways in which one can want or grab at. And what that does is that creates an experience of anticipation in the mind-body system, where we start to get a little bit restless, or we start to get activated, where we start to separate from what's happening because we want to improve the experience. We're anticipating the experience to be better. There's kind of what I call wanting. There's wanting going on. And a lot of times we could have that going on and not know that it's going on and actually start to feel unpleasant, start to feel discontent, start to feel a sense of lack by that. So we just want to see if that's, is that attitude of mind happening right now. Yeah.
Say like, just trying to understand it. So say I'm not experiencing any physical pain at this moment. So the more I acknowledge that, the easier when I'm in pain, it's going to be to deal with that, or the longer I say I'm not in pain right now, it'll help me realize when I am in pain that, like, it's, you know,
it's temporary.
It's temporary. So just is that kind of what you're saying? It's just.
Yeah, trying to notice the absence of pain, and then as we talk about in the heart practices, having some ease or some gratitude or some like a sense of, oh, I'm actually okay right now, because you know we don't recognize the absence of particular qualities that are distressing. So if you have some physical discomfort going on, you mostly are only recognizing it when it's actually there, and when it's not there, there's not a mindfulness of the absence of that difficulty.
Right. So either wishing it would, like you would low key, so I don't have to sit there and wonder like every time is it. So it just takes a long time for you to realize, like, say I'm not in pain right now, and then when I am in pain to be like, well, you weren't in pain earlier. It's a long process, right? Is what you're saying.
It's a long process. It is hard to train the mind to recognize the absence of things, because the mind's always looking for. So again, in the third foundation, we're looking for the presence and absence of a whole wide range of categories. But the first ones and the ones that are most obvious probably are these greed, hatred, and delusion forces. This idea of wanting something to happen, wanting something to go away, or in delusion, it's usually just kind of wandering mind, daydreaming, thinking, being lost in that, where you're not particularly being dictated by a sense of pleasure or a sense of pain, but you're not really here either. You know, you're kind of just spaced out, which, you know, is probably the one that's least destructive, but we want to learn how to be present for these kind of experiences. The other thing I think that's important around this practice, is that we don't, this is where the judgment can kick in and be hard, is we don't want to start thinking that we're bad or wrong for having the mind state. So we might be having some greed in the mind or some anger in the mind, some restlessness, some worry in the mind. And then what we want to be able to do in this practice is to just recognize that that's there. But usually what happens is we get caught up in feeling like it's my fault in some way. I shouldn't have hatred in my mind. I shouldn't have greed in my mind. And of course, that just becomes another type of resistance. You know, so there's a way in which this is a kind of a more of a radical objectivity that we're looking for in this particular practice of just being like, well, I'm just really a lot of greed in my mind today. I'm just wanting everything to be different. Well, isn't that interesting? A lot of wanting going on right now. A lot of resistance going on right now. I'm resisting the pain in my body. I'm resisting the time. I just resistance, resistance, resistance. Wow. Whew. Mindfulness of that. Okay, this is what that's like. And so it's a way in which we're trying to become familiar with these particular states and qualities, not for the purpose of getting rid of them or thinking we're bad for having them, but being able to, the more time in intimacy we develop with these states, the more likely we are to recognize them when they happen again. So there is a learning aspect to this foundation of mindfulness of like, and when we talk about emotional intelligence this afternoon, this is where it gets very, very interesting, is to be able to, in mindfulness, being able to recognize these mental states, which is kind of a general way of what is the state of the mind. And then the attitude that we have towards that state, which I find attitude is the most descriptive word of understanding the presence or absence of greed, hatred, or delusion. Is there any attitude in my awareness right now that's grabbing at something, that's wanting to bring something in? Is there any attitude of mind right now that is resisting, that is trying to push something away, or not? Or are those qualities not there? And the more we're able to see those functions, those movements, then we can start to look maybe at the engine that drives that. And usually I find that those mental activities or those attitudes of mind are usually driven by some form of an emotional engine. So fear would probably be the one that's maybe the most obvious. That's our most primal emotion, is fear. And the thing about these states, they're not going anywhere, folks. You know, you're not going to get rid of them. But we need to be mindful of them, the presence and absence of them, and then trying to learn. So, all right, I'm back on. Let me put this on airplane. Here we go. So I find, and one of the things that happens, I think, for a lot of people who practice on their own or go to beginner classes is a lot of times they don't take you into this kind of aspect of mindfulness. It's more back to the body, back to the breath. There's all this, I don't know what it is or if it's anybody's fault, but there's a tendency to keep people in the body and the breath for so long. But there's a way in which when people start to have some fluency in mindfulness practice and you're actually able to really practice with this third foundation of mindfulness, there's so much to learn about ourselves, about our minds. So we begin to kind of just see if we can get a practice-based way of working with these kinds of experiences. And then as we use the body, incorporate the body, then we can see if they're being driven by fear, anger, sadness, contempt, disgust, surprise, enjoyment, and learning how to. This is where I think one of the areas where East meets West is so good. There's this really great way in which traditional mindfulness is limited in the sense that it's always looking for this presence and absence of greed, hatred, and delusion. But in the Western paradigm, we have all these different ranges of terminology around emotions. You don't see things in the classic mindfulness teachings. You don't see a lot of talk about sadness or shame or anger. Of course, anger and hatred are probably very much associated with each other. But there's our vocabulary, our English vocabulary, we have a pretty good lexicon for emotion. And in early Buddhist meditation training, that's not so much present. So I think it's a good way where this mindfulness practice can have a more therapeutic quality to it. So I think that's all I'm going to say about that, and we'll do some sitting, and I'll stop this here and start a new recording for the guided